Welcome to the Fan Pregame, brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert for you the next hour. We've got quite a lot to go through and a couple guests to circle through, but we're coming off some breaking news happening just before we came on the air. I love when that happens. Excited. We got a Blue Jays jersey up in the studio because the Blue Jays have landed Max Scherzer on a 1-year, $15.5 million contract. He is, as we all know, going to be a future Hall of Famer, an 8-time All-Star, 3-time Cy Young winner, and a 2-time World Series champ. But yes, he has dealt with some injuries, and that is probably the biggest question mark as a 40-year-old, but a huge presence and a guy that I think a lot of people are excited to see in the Blue Jays uniform.
Yeah, reduced to 17 starts over the last 2 years. There is reason to be like, okay, maybe this won't be like the perfect addition to a team that is World Series bound, but boy, is it fun. Like, Max Scherzer, if we just strip it down to, like, entertainment and baseball, he's a maniac.
Yep.
He's going to sweat through his shirt. He's going to throw the ball really hard, and he's going to entertain Blue Jays fans, and that's why I'm just all for this move. It is just money. The commitment isn't really anything at all. It's a one-year term, something to get excited about, something to put butts in seats and make Blue Jays baseball a little bit more interesting. Max Scherzer, he's a maniac. I can't wait to see him on the mound for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, of course, we're not sure about how many starts he's got in him, but I think just for the presence he brings alone, that veteran experience, the way he can intimidate on the mound, like, I think Blue Jays fans should be excited about this. Of course, it'll be dependent on how many games he can actually pitch, but I think this rotation is really shaking out pretty strong. It helps move Yariel Rodriguez to the bullpen, which the bullpen is looking stronger than I think we had anticipated with some of those additions with Hoffman especially, but Rodriguez being in that bullpen spot now. I think the Blue Jays starting rotation, although older, still has a lot to give. Question marks about where Manoah will fit into it, but if you go through the rotation, adding Scherzer near the back end, like, I mean, I don't see, I think this is low risk, high reward in a sense. It's just money. If he's not healthy and he doesn't pitch well, then that's just kind of the risk you're taking with somebody at this caliber to add to your roster.
Then you're leaning on, Bowden Francis, maybe Alec Manoah, maybe Jake Bloss. You go down the line a little bit more, but maybe a bridge to get to those young guys. Hopefully they can be ready sooner than later, because Max Scherzer's not going to be a Blue Jay forever as a 40-year-old, but we'll see what he can do over the course of 162 games this summer. But the maybe most intriguing aspect of this is that we know, or we're led to believe, that Max Scherzer was challenging the Blue Jays to improve their lineup because he wants to win. He doesn't want to just take in $15.5 million, work and live in a new country, and just go through the motions. Like, this is an intense competitor who wanted the Blue Jays to be able to win games if he was going to sign on the dotted line, and he signed on the dotted line. So does that mean there's another move? Does that mean Max Scherzer has been assured that, yeah, we're going to be even better than we are right now, despite a busy offseason where we've brought in some key parts? We've got a guy who can hit 44 home runs out of the ballpark in Anthony Santander and addressed other areas. Are they going to do more because Max Scherzer wanted them to do more in order to get the signature? I think we're going to be waiting for potential news to drop following this one because, yeah, I think there was something real about that, and there's also real reason for the Blue Jays to want to be better than they are at this point.
Shares an agent with Pete Alonso, and Pete Alonso and Max Scherzer with the Boris background, maybe there's something there where, okay, you got one of them, it might help to show that your roster is a bit more competitive, it might help open the door. Obviously, I'm like romanticizing it a little bit, but we know that there was discussions about kind of holding off to see where the Blue Jays are at. So if you get a Scherzer and your roster looks a little bit heavier, a little bit better, I don't know how this negatively affects Pete Alonso. If you've got the money and he sees that the roster is getting better, I think that I would be interested in that.
And there are other avenues to explore as well. Alex Bregman is still out there. Alex Bregman still plays a position that the Blue Jays could easily offer to him, in that one of the holes on this roster is a third baseman. They have many options to play third base, but do they have a natural option like Alex Bregman? No, I don't think they do. So there are other avenues still beyond Alonso to improve the look of this team, to be to have more thump in the lineup, to be more dynamic offensively. And if it's all to a part of the plan here for Scherzer, then that's a great thing.
All right. Blair and Barker are going to make a surprise appearance on Sportsnet 590 The Fan from 7 to 8. But let's bring in Shai Davidi of Sportsnet to help us go through the breaking news of the Blue Jays landing Max Scherzer. Shai, thanks for jumping on. How's it going?
All right. How are you guys?
We're fired up. I mean, I'm fired up. I know that it's a 40-year-old Max Scherzer, but he's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's a 2-time World Series champ, a 3-time Cy Young pitcher. He has that energy, that presence that is like intimidating and fun to watch. What does adding Max Scherzer to this Blue Jays rotation mean for you when you look at their potential?
Well, this is the one piece of sort of their off-season to-do list that they hadn't gotten to yet. It was a starting pitcher. Obviously, with some of the pursuits earlier in the off-season, Corbin Burns and Max Fried, that could have taken their off-season could have taken a bit of a different shape. But they get this done now, and this deepens the rotation, and it obviously comes with some risk. It's certainly an interesting upside play on the Blue Jays' behalf, right? Because it's not. Scherzer's coming off a season which he made 9 starts, 43 innings. It's the least amount of pitching he's done in a big league season since he debuted in 2008. There were injuries, obviously, that were accounting for that. He had back surgery 2 Decembers ago. He had to rehab that, and he had shoulder and hamstring issues. So there's risk that, you know, that he's not able to be Max Scherzer. But when he pitched, he was able to be himself. And if the Blue Jays can get even half a season of that, you can combine that with everything else that they have. And the rotation's a little bit deeper. Maybe Yariel Rodriguez is in the bullpen right now. You've got some protection if Bowden Francis regresses. It really helps the Blue Jays in a number of different ways. But again, there is that risk element, but the Blue Jays are betting on some upside here.
For better or worse, I keep asking myself why the Jays, after every decision is made this offseason, so I guess I'll ask it with this one. Why did Max Scherzer choose the Blue Jays?
My guess is that, I don't want to speak for him. I've dealt with him a little bit, but don't know him particularly well. But my guess is that of the teams that were interested in him, he saw this as the most competitive group and the best pathway to the postseason for him. He does have at least one close friend on the team, and Chris Bassett, who was a teammate with him on the Mets in New York, and maybe that created some comfort for him as well. But I think that, you know, you look at the Blue Jays right now, they're going to be a pretty good defensive club with the way that they're set up, especially with Andrés Giménez in the mix. Santander gives them a chance to be a better offensive team, and the American League East is deep. But the American League in general, it's not as top-heavy as the National League right now. And maybe he likes the way the pathway looks, at least from the suitors that were in play for him.
Which suitors were left for Max Scherzer when you look at the list of teams that might have been able to land his services?
Well, I mean, there are still a lot of teams who are looking for a starting pitcher. And, I'm not 100% certain on who was in there at the end in bidding for his services. So I don't want to speculate on that, but I mean, you still look at some of the pitchers that are available in the market, be it, Flaherty or Nick Pivetta. There's Quintana. There's this, maybe it available in trade is, possibly Dylan Cease or maybe Michael King from the Padres. There's still some pitching out there, and very few teams are in position to say, "Hey, we're good." So the market probably was pretty good, but these decisions always come down to: are you high bid, and do you have a better opportunity than everybody else? And I guess I can only speculate that the Blue Jays were that combination right now for Max Scherzer.
Just feels good to win one, Shai. I wanted to hear all the lists of those that came second, third, fourth, fifth. We'll take the win. We're talking to Shai Davidi after the Blue Jays reportedly signing Max Scherzer to a 1-year, $15.5 million contract. I want to ask you about how this might help accompany another move, maybe another potential Boris client, maybe someone like Pete Alonso looking at this roster is thinking, okay, maybe the Blue Jays have had a pretty good offseason. How much does that influence at all what the Blue Jays could do next?
I mean, potentially. I also wonder if there's sort of a guarantee that there is going to be something next for the Blue Jays. And, I don't think it was a lock that there was going to be another move after Santander. And I thought, just reading between the lines of Ross Atkins's comments after the Santander signing, the Blue Jays, I would guess, are right around their budget right now. So I think, just, and again, this is based off Ross Atkins's words, that anything that they do has to really be some a decision that they can defend from a business perspective, because they're going to need ownership approval for some other moves. So I think right now the Blue Jays, I don't know if we can describe them as sort of being super aggressive. I think they're still involved. They're still looking for opportunities, but they might be in a situation where, they're waiting to see how other situations play out, and maybe they're more reacting to the market as opposed to driving it.
The Bassett piece is interesting because Bassett was like most critical of the front office, and if he's got the relationship with Scherzer, I just find it interesting that they're putting a lot of chips into the middle of the table, and that includes someone who is close to Bassett who may want some assurances about the team at this stage of his career as well. It will be, based on what we have now, exclusively a right-handed starting rotation with a mean age of about 34. I understand there's some risk associated with this deal. There's some risk associated with going into the season with what they have. But does that spell anything for you, possibility of a six-man rotation? Like, when you look at that group, when you look at that situation, like, what can you deduce from it?
Yeah, look, I think that the way that the Blue Jays could have gone about constructing their rotation is really interesting, because if you remember the last couple of months of last year, the Blue Jays starters made, I think it was all but one turn of the rotation with an extra day of rest, and that was very deliberate on their part. But right now, they're not sort of actively planning for that. If Roky Sasaki had chosen the Blue Jays, then we would definitely be in a six-man rotation kind of a conversation. But I think right now they'll just monitor, and they can find ways to insert an extra starter if they need to get some guys an extra bit of rest at different points, be it, let's say Jake Bloss is at AAA, he could come up and make a spot start and then go back down if they felt that was necessary. If Yariel Rodriguez ends up in the bullpen, which is definitely a possibility and something I think the Blue Jays would feel good about, if that's how spring training ends up playing out, then he could maybe do a spot start. So I think they'll definitely be creative at different points to make sure that they're keeping this rotation feeling healthy and strong. But they were able to get their guys, their key guys, wire to wire over the last couple of seasons. And you never want to count on that, but I think the Blue Jays would feel confident about that situation. And then they've got Alek Manoah possibly in the mix some point late in the summer, if not earlier.
Mm-hmm. Well, Shai, we really appreciate you jumping on with some breaking news for us. Blair and Barker will be on at 7 for our listeners to go a little bit further into detail on the Max Scherzer signing and how it impacts the Blue Jays. So looking forward to seeing what you have to write, Shai, and stay tuned, I guess, for more, because it could be more.
It's always possible, but I right now I'm not anticipating that, but you never know.
All right. Thanks so much, Shai. I appreciate your time.
Take care.
That's Shai Davidi of Sportsnet. As if you missed it, Blue Jays are signing Max Scherzer to a 1-year, $15.5 million contract, which is $500,000 more than Justin Verlander.
Probably on purpose. Some relief, too, in getting it done now, because there is a recent history of guys just showing up a little bit late. Like, I could have seen this happen late, and they just never get started. Even Kevin Gausman with the injury last year. That's never true, really got it going. Jordan Montgomery, Blake Snell from last year. To get this done, Max Scherzer is going to be, in 2 weeks' time, in Dunedin with the Blue Jays. Ooh. Sets himself up for success this year.
Got to get myself a Scherzer. Shout out Sam McKee, who gave us that before he left. Mm-hmm. I think that'll sell.
He nailed it.
I think it'll sell.
The Scherzer Scherzer?
Yeah, it'll be great. Still a lot to do, maybe, for the Blue Jays, but a really good sign. Maybe helping tip the hand to a couple more free agents that are interested.
It's got to be, like, gray, though, so you can sweat right through it.
Yeah.
Like Max Scherzer.
Really into the sweat. Mike Feudo, the Fan Hockey Show, jumps on. Mike, we appreciate you coming on. Sorry we had to move you a little later in the show. We had fun breaking news. And you got a Blue Jays shirt on. Good work, Mike.
That's what you want. That's what we're talking about, is it?
That's it. Yep. We got Mad Max signing here in Toronto. We do appreciate coming on.
Your rotation. Glad he's moving to third.
Yep. That works for me.
Who are you putting on first?
Alfonso.
Alfonso. Pete Alonso.
You know, I have enough trouble names from 12 to 2.
No, that's good. I think you're onto something, Feuds. We'll get you on Jays Talk Plus come the summer. We only have a few minutes with you, so we gotta be focused. I feel bad. We want to talk about Drew Doughty because this is a big name, obviously, you've got some familiarity with. First came back in the lineup last night. He played 23:51, so they're not just easing him in. And he's got 6 total games in this stretch before he could make the Four Nations roster or at least showcase himself. Like, is he the best fit for Team Canada to fill that spot?
Yes, in a short term. And I don't mean that and he's got to be ready. And I spoke to him about it when he was injured and he was devastated. And this is I guess they call him Hockey Canada darling, so to speak. But Drew has just lived from the under 17 program, gold, under 18, world juniors. Then he, you know, 2 Olympic medals, Stanley Cups. He lives and breathes for it. He's done all the different things. And he was devastated with the injury. I think a door was open, but he's also smart enough to know that he's got to be Drew Doughty as well, right? He said, I think his quote last night, and this is a guy that does not lack confidence, and I mean that in a positive way. He said, he's never been so nervous to play an NHL hockey game. And I mean, I think obviously these guys now with skate, the way skates are and how rigid they are to have such a foot injury like that, to get yourself comfortable to be able to play. And I think he eased himself back in. I know he said that he felt better in the third period. He's treating these games like preseason training camp playoff games for him to earn his spot. And if he's not ready, there's some incredible names that can fill in. I mean, you clearly hear what Mackenzie Weegar said, who, I mean, the list is endless. These guys are chomping at the bit. Nobody, and everybody says this, you know, the tournament doesn't mean as much. Well, to certain guys, it means everything to get a chance, especially some of the guys. For some of these guys, it's the first time pulling on a Canadian jersey. For others that have lived and dreamed it and realized this might be the last chance. In Drew's case, he's certainly hoping the Olympics is his last chance, but I know how much it means to him and how hard he's going to try to prove he belongs there.
Is that how he achieved darling status? Because it means more to him, I guess, than the normal NHL player, the normal Canadian hockey player, beyond what he obviously gives on the ice, which is, you know, brilliant top defenseman stuff for Canada in the past. Like, what makes him that Hockey Canada darling?
Because he's one of the best defensemen to play the game, and he's one of the most competitive guys that I've ever been a part of. I mean, again, we were fortunate enough to draft. We would have taken him first overall, and that was no knock on Steven Stamkos, but he's a warrior. And I know his first tournament, and I know it's just a term. I don't think I've ever heard Doughty and darling in the same sense, for one thing. Toothless, yes. Reckless, yes. Never darling. So that was a term I used. He literally, I think the first tournament, it was a hard sell on him being a 7. And I think by the end of the Olympics, he was playing in the 4 spot. He rises to the occasion. He's competitive. He's adjusted his game. He was devastated when they were going through some losing years in LA, and he was so excited them having a better team and having a chance to be relevant again in playoff action. And I just hope he keeps healthy, because nobody cares about representing his country more than Drew. And I know when the window opened, he was thrilled. Not you hate to see what happened with Petro or Petrangelo and stuff like that, but I know he was thrilled to get the opportunity and get the call.
Just a quick one on this. Kings obviously have a couple too many defense on the roster, and Brant Clark getting the healthy scratch. Like, do you think that that's just to help alleviate a little bit of space? Like, our producer David Siss, very upset that Brant Clark
wants answers.
Like, that's just a temporary thing? You think they're trying to trade him?
Glasses?
Yeah, he was getting mad. He was breaking glasses. But is that a temporary thing, or is that a potential trade target for the LA Kings?
I can't imagine. I mean, anytime, I know from when I was there when they drafted Clark after I left, he and Quentin Byfield were the untouchables. Mm-hmm. Right. The other thing, when you look at what the LA Kings had on the right side as opposed to what they have now, I think it would be very, very risky to give up on somebody so young with such an upside. Like, 2 years ago, and so much pride we had taken in the right shot D, it was Dersey, Faber, Matt Roy, Sean Walker. These were all guys that were coming up on Spence and stuff like that to be the next, like you talk about how hard it is to get right shot D. Those guys were like a Baskin Robbins of all kinds of great right shot D. And now the list has dwindled down. I mean, well, they've added some good pieces, but it'd be very risky. I would think as much as some of these people want instant gratification, I'm sure Brant Clark would be devastated thinking that he's kind of bait his time, but sometimes you've got to pay your time a little longer. And I mean, if he has to, I think a lot has to do more fact that he's the only one that I don't think is waiver exempt. And they are not in a position right now up against the cap where they want to, even a guy like Jacob Movari, who's been really good for them as a six or seven, these guys are all waiver. They all have to clear waivers, right? Yeah. So sometimes it sucks that way, but Spence seems to be getting the majority of the minutes. I read Jim Hillier's comment the other night about it's tough, but it's young. It's a tough league to play in, which sounded like there might have quietly been a decision made already. But Brant Clark's going to have an exceptionally long career in the National Hockey League. Hopefully it's with the LA Kings. But I think it's all about, you're not bringing Drew Doughty back and playing him 17 minutes. Yeah. Like this, that's, and that'll be interesting for Drew adapting to a new system. He's only played one game out of the new system. He's probably squeezing it, knows that he's got 6 days or six games to showcase himself for a world-class event. So it should be interesting to watch over the next few days.
Hard 60 seconds here, Futes. Does the Mikko Rantanen addition make Carolina the best team in the Eastern Conference?
Right now, I think it rattles the equation enough that other teams have to react to it. Mm. And the fact that they have the cap space to add something else, yes, I believe so. Goalie staying healthy aside, Freddie, I think it'll be interesting for me who becomes the number one, because when Freddie's healthy, he's pretty darn good. But they're really comfortable with Kachetkov as well.
Okay, you got another 60 seconds because these are good, concise
short
answers.
Shifts here, Fuse.
Short shifts.
Very nice.
What's with the Leafs Arena vibe? Because you guys were there last night. Is it as bad as it sounds?
That's all my buddy.
I was listening to you guys on the Fan Hockey Show today. He was very upset.
He went full Sid Sixero and he was upset with the crowd. He made good buddies with this little guy next to him who caught a T-shirt. And the Leafs hadn't done anything to wake the crowd up, unfortunately. And the Leaf is play. It's not a loud place when they're rocking. So they were doing nothing. And a couple posts got them going. But then you bring out the $15 T-shirt. And then the $25 beers kick in and people lose their mind. That's what was happening. People were screaming for T-shirts. And unfortunately, you know, they got loud when the Leafs scored late, when Nylander scored, but it's a tough crowd and you've got to be entertaining. And I think everybody, even in Leafs side of things last night, would say that wasn't an overly entertaining performance, particularly you're not going to be at home till the 21st of next month. So that's a bit of a sour taste to leave your Leafers in mind, because with all the breaks and stuff, they're not going to be home for a while.
Okay. Keep getting that oil of oregano in you, Fuse, because you sound better. You sound great.
Yeah, we'll get off here and it'll be a hack fest. I got my dad back from the hospital, so he's in good shape now.
Okay, that's good. So
we'll up a couple of oreganos and watch some hockey tonight.
Well, sounds we appreciate great. You lending some time. I hope everyone's feeling well, and thanks again.
Always the best.
Go thanks Jays, go, eh?
Absolutely.
Thanks, Futes. That's Mike Fiuta, the Fan Hockey Show. Jam-packed first half hour here on the Fan pregame. Didn't even mention what we've got on tonight. L.A. and Tampa Bay. In hockey action, 7 o'clock on Sportsnet, Detroit and Edmonton on Sportsnet 1 at 9. As we mentioned, Blair and Barker are going to come live on Sportsnet 590, The Fan at 7, for a special breaking news appearance with Max Scherzer signing with the Toronto Blue Jays, $15.5 million for a one-year deal.
And we had breaking news before the breaking news.
Oh, we did have breaking.
Which was that the Utah Hockey Club, which could still be, after a fan vote, the Utah Hockey Club, has made an amendment to their final three choices.
Maybe because I couldn't pronounce Wasich.
I think it's because no one can pronounce
Wasich. So Wasich is out. They said, never mind, we know you hate it. And Outlaws is in, and I like the Outlaws.
Okay, but like they're supposed to have logos.
They're just
going to be like, hey, we got in the back an Outlaws logo. Ready to go. Like,
that's
it
what
just
I
feels
see.
Like they got to slow things down a little bit. Just make a decision quietly.
Peer pressure
and
worked
unveil
yesterday.
Unveil something that actually is going to stick. Like, it's not a good look for me.
It is getting a little bit like Mickey Mouse.
They got to get their house in order.
Where they've got, okay, we have these team names. And then one day of people not being able to pronounce Wasich, they boot Wasich out of here. And they've got Outlaws in there. So anyway, nonetheless.
We should just be really mean about Outlaws and make them do it again.
And then be like, we'll buy the patent from Yeti.
We might have to put a GoFundMe together for it.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk to Steve Koulias on the other side because we got Four Nations captains as well.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're going to shift over to a little hockey talk in the next half here. Big game tonight. Marc-Andre Fleury will make his last start in Montreal. It will not be for the Canadiens, obviously, for the Minnesota Wild, but a pretty big send-off planned in Montreal as a legend rolls through the Bell Center one last time.
Yeah, you can find that on Sportsnet Plus outside the Montreal region. He's got some pretty good numbers. I know you're going to touch on those later in Montreal. So we'll see if Marc-Andre Fleury can make the last start in Montreal a successful one.
All right, earlier today we got the captain's, and this is the captain's name for the Four Nations face-off, which is just around the corner. And our next guest is going to help call it, Four Nations play-by-play. And, of course, SiriusXM NHL radio host, it's Steve Kulia. Steve, it's been a while. How are you?
Feeling good. I wore the Spengler Cup.
Oh, yeah.
The two win, the three wins. I had nothing to do with it. I just called the games, but they give you a ring, so what the heck?
I love it.
It's good to be back with you guys.
It's so fun. You always bring the energy. We're excited to chat. So, captains, I don't think there are any surprises. Maybe some were surprised that Austin Matthews got it over Quinn Hughes. But, you know, living in Toronto, we're like, that's the right decision. But Justin and I were talking about the legacy potential for Sidney Crosby and all this. I think he could be one of the best captains ever, like in any sport, to don the C. But you look at Sid getting to be the captain for Canada once again. I feel like there's a lot riding, like, emotionally and I guess sentimentally for him on this one.
Yeah, and I mean, I've heard talk about, you know, his last turn or kick at the can. I stayed up. Look at the bags here last night. He sets up a goal and scores it in overtime. I was there in 2010 mm-hmm. working at the Score in Vancouver when it was a hero in February 28th of that year. Sid is aging as well as anyone other than Ovi. They're aging at the same rate, basically, and he will be a 40-year-old NHLer. Will he be in Italy next year? I wouldn't bet against him. I know he wants to be a center in this tournament. I've got McDavid, McKinnon, and Crosby down the middle. If he plays with any one of those other guys, that's great. He can still contribute. The problem is he's on a terrible team. And look, we can compare him to, like, real football, what we call soccer here in North America, of what he's been able to do at a national level. And it all started at the World Juniors, the dream team in North Dakota. They waxed the Russians in the final. What he's done with the Penguins, what he's done for Team Canada. I mean, 2010, 2014, 2016, back-to-back-to-back best-on-best champions. Unbelievable. The U.S. has come a long way even since 2016, but Sid has been able to age well, and it'll be another huge chance for him.
Yeah, it feels kind of silly to talk about, like, merit captaincy for the Four Nations face-off. Like, it is a product that you're trying to sell. But he's more of a captain than Austin Matthews. I don't see Matthews doing Camp Matthews in Vail, Colorado with a bunch of Canadian or American players to get ready for this tournament. Like, clearly, Crosby is in this role for a very good reason and is taking it seriously. Like, I would be surprised if there's not another Camp Crosby in Vail next year in preparation for the Olympics. So this feels like something that he's definitely taking very, very seriously. And why wouldn't he? I mean, to achieve fulfillment at this stage in his career, it has to come with a Hockey Canada sweater, because as you mentioned, the Pittsburgh Penguins are just not in any position. So there is international hockey coming up. We've got the Four Nations, we got the Olympics, we got a World Cup of Hockey in 2028. Do you see this as the only real chance for Crosby to add to a legacy that is obviously can't be touched, but with the NHL and his games at the NHL level, it just feels like it's going to be difficult for him to make extensions to it beyond wearing that Hockey Canada sweater.
Well, if he ages as gracefully as he has been, and I think that he will, I mean, if we look at 2 years from now or even three, you know, that's a 40-year-old year. I'm looking realistically at February, where he's going to be a major player, and next year in Italy. I have a difficult time believing the Celebrinis and Bedards of the world are going to knock Crosby down and out. Mm-hmm. If the worst thing was that Sid was the third line left winger or Gulp the fourth line left winger, it would be a role that I think he'd take. He might not wear a letter at that point. I have a tough time believing there'll be 13 or 14 players that would even bump him in a year from now. Anytime we've even counted him out a little bit when Mike Johnston was the Penguins coach and he got off to a bad start. because he wanted D to me, not D to D. He left Johnston, and they won two more cups. So I'm giving Sid 13 months of greatness for Team Canada.
Perfect.
I got more than that.
55 points in 53 that. Games this year. Like, yeah, you're right. He's not slowing down anytime soon. I want to ask you about some of the open spot on the back end. Pietrangelo withdrawing for Canada. Two-part question. Are you concerned that more NHLers are going to view this as optional? And I'm using air quotes for our listeners, because technically there's no NHL punishment. If you have an injury or you need to take time, you can do it, I guess, without being punished. People were not happy, but he can technically do it. And secondly, who do you think would be a great fit to fill that spot?
Chris Tanev. It's his spot. It's his spot. Defensive defenseman. I know Don Sweeney, very impressed with the Leafs, especially at the start of the year when Marchand in Toronto said they're a different team that's playing the right way. That's Don Sweeney, the GM, with Jim Nail, who knows a thing or two about winning every place he's been, and with John Cooper and what he's been able to see as well. And it's nothing against Mackenzie Weegar. Evan Bouchard's not the fit. It's not an offensive player. It's about stopping Matthews and Hughes and Hughes and Tkachuk. And Tkachuk. That's what Jay Bouwmeester did. Mark Edward Vlasic did. That's what the history of Canadian hockey is. You've got your Makar and your Morrissey. Power play one, power play two. Then it's about stopping the opposition. I think it's Tanev's spot, and I would give it to him, guys, right now.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad for Evan Bouchard, because with Cale Makar, it just feels like he's not going to have that very specific curated role, which is the power play quarterback, which is having so much chemistry with Connor McDavid, who's going to be the most important player for Hockey Canada over the next 10 to 15 years. But it just feels like the way Hockey Canada operates, having two like that in Makar is more than just a power play quarterback, clearly. But it just feels like there's a bit of a roadblock there for Evan Bouchard. You may have just mentioned it being Tanev or Pietrangelo, although it seems like, you know, you could have both of those two players on the roster. But if you had to do a do-over, a roster spot do-over for Team Canada, do you look at goaltending? Do you look somewhere else on the roster? Where was there a mistake
made? You get one mulligan, one breakfast ball.
I need two. I need two. Logan Thompson is the second best goalie in the world right now. That's obviously a miss now at the time. See, I thought as a, you know, I like to think outside the box. I might have named like Matt Murray or Carey Price as the third goalie, told Gary, sorry, Carey might come out of retirement. He's not.
We like his experience.
And then I'm going to pick Logan Thompson. I'm a huge Mark Scheifele guy. You imagine if he's the leading Canadian goal scorer at the break and he's not on the team. What is this, the World Juniors again? We're talking about who's not on the team. So anyway, those would be my two mulligans if you give me two. Thompson and Scheifele. Obviously, probably Montembeau. Never played a playoff game. And Seth Jarvis. Sorry, Seth. He's a winger. Scheifele can play center or the wing.
It is hilarious. That was like, we need State of the Union for Canadian goaltending. Like, yeah. We need to have a summit. We have a goaltender. We just didn't choose to take that goal.
Yeah, it's a tough look. We're chatting with Steve Cooley, a SiriusXM NHL radio host, going to be doing play-by-play for the Four Nations face-off, which is just about 2 weeks away. Austin Matthews, the captain of United States, and we were looking through like the history of captains of the United States, and it's like obviously a huge honor to be that. Like, it feels like him being chosen to be the face of the United States, you look ahead, like it's like a new era, and he's the guy. Not Brady Tkachuk, not Matthew Tkachuk, not Quinn Hughes. Austin Matthews. What does that legacy mean to be the captain of the United States, specifically when they got a pretty good team and they're going to make a run for it?
Yeah, it's. I mean, we might argue 96. Maybe going into that tournament, Canada was aging out. Mm-hmm. Some players clearly didn't want to play, like Ray Bourque, Patrick Waugh, Mary Lemieux. So Glenn Sather had a tough task. And that American team was really, really good. Billy Guerin, Dougie Waite, Mike Modano, Mike Richter probably stole the tournament. So maybe that's as close at the best on best that Canada and the U.S. have been. Although Brett Hull and Adam Deadmarsh, two American, Canadian Americans really on the team. Now things have changed. It's like we are sort of chasing them. They've done a lot with the National Development Program. And Matthews is in a position as the captain where he's never won anything.
Right.
Crosby, Barkov, Hedman. I mean, Tkachuk's won, and he's going to be part of a leadership role. But Matthews is the face of USA Hockey right now. So there's going to be pressure on winning this event and the bigger event coming up next year. I think he can handle it. We hope the back from a, obviously, Toronto perspective is going to be fine. And in the playoffs, he's had some clutch goals and some success, but one playoff series victory. So now it's about winning when it matters more in a mini tournament and coming up clutch and using those people around you to make them better. I think that's part of the key that Mitch and Matthews have played well, very well in the regular season, hasn't translated into playoff success. Every game in this tournament is like a game seven. So let's see how he handles that in this event.
This is somewhat anecdotal, but I think you do raise a good point. Like the United States team, it seems like just off the top of my head that they've done the least amount of actual winning at the NHL level.
I've gone through each and every player. I mean, I got my, I'm going to have my sheets.
I knew you'd have it.
Start going through the sheets in just a moment. But when you look at it, though, they're a younger group, a lot of dynamic players. I mean, where Quinn Hughes is, Dakale McCarr, Matthews. Look at them down the middle here. You know, Eichel's won, and Eichel, he could have won the Conn Smythe Trophy that year. Mm-hmm. Jack Hughes has done a great job. The depth of the JT Millers of the world, if those are the four centermen. Kyle Connor hasn't won, but he's able to score in the regular season. So I think they've got a great mix in net, on the blue line, and up front. And there's only one way to cure winning if you've never done it before. They said it about Braden Holtby. They said it about Corey Crawford. And they said it about Eddie Belfour. Until you win, you haven't won. And if this group wins this event, boy, that changes the narrative going into Italy next year from an American perspective.
Yeah, we haven't spoken much about Finland and Sweden, like personally on this show much at all. But Miro Heiskanen out is a huge loss for Finland, and Markstrom out for Sweden as well. Like, is there any chance it's not Canada-US in the final? Is there someone that can really push the four nations face off to have an upset when you look at those injuries as well?
Well, depth, especially in Finland, is going to come into play. I mean, Jani Hakanpaa is on the roster. He's only played two games in the NHL.
Yeah.
And this is an NHL tournament. Everyone's supposed to be NHL players. Mm-hmm. But apparently Yuri Lehtinen saying, well, we got some other guys in Finland here that we might need to use or want to use. So I don't know how that's going to play out. Look, 2004 World Cup going back 20 years ago, Finland was in the final. We talk about the 2006 Olympics. It was Sweden against Finland, right? The Czechs did win with 98. And, of course, that was Dominik Hasek. One game, anything can happen, but the injuries right now are more affecting the Scandinavian countries. And the only roster team that has no roster influx is the Americans. They're still set in goal. McAvoy's back, and everything's kumbaya up front. So right now in this tournament that maybe has been made for the U.S. to win, they're sitting in a really good position, and the final game's in Boston, don't forget.
Yeah, the Heiskanen injury is brutal because the Finns barely had enough NHL defensemen even to get by. You mentioned Jani Hakanpaa. We'll see what happens there. Like, they might actually have to tap into someone that's not playing in the NHL in order to make this work, which, again, belies, you know, the spirit of what this was supposed to be. But then again, if you're handcuffing them, that doesn't make much sense either. But it does outline some issues with the tournament. And again, this might be the only time we see this because the World Cup of Hockey could include all these different teams, perhaps Russia by that point. We will see. But if you were to make one adjustment here, like, what makes sense to you? Does it make more sense, or would it have made more sense to you to just do a Canada-USA series? Could you see a world where they do embrace
like
something like that?
Series,
the women's rivalry series is a massive thing. It's better, I think, than the World Championship. And it's actually the perfect thing, I think, to reignite fans south of the border.
Well, I mean, if you bring up the Summit Series idea, the window was open in February to play for Boston, New York, Chicago, L.A., and then Vancouver, Edmonton, Toronto, Montreal, head-to-head. I think the league wanted. Remember, if you add up these four countries, that's about 88% of all NHL players. So that's kind of getting as many players involved as possible. If I would add one more thing, it would have been like a world team. So Ovi could play, Pastrnak could play, Dreisaitl, who's leading the league in goals, could play. You put all those guys on a fifth team, a four-game
like
round.
The United Nations.
Final. That's what I would have done. Summit Series idea might come to fruition in the future, but maybe better to play it in September than right now. Mm. The owners cringe anytime anyone goes into the boards in these events.
Oh, yeah.
Look at what happened with Sakic and Tavares in previous events. Hopefully no injuries, knock on wood, in February.
Most definitely. We're talking to Steve Koulias, SiriusXM NHL Radio, and Four Nations Play-by-Play coming up around the corner. Let's ask you just general NHL. What's the thing that you're, like, most tuned into the second half? Is it that Eastern Conference playoff race? Because that's pretty unbelievable. Ovi getting the goal, scoring race. Like, what's your storyline that you're tuned in for the rest of the season?
Well, those are two for sure. I mean, Ovi doing it, and I'm counting the games played for Ovi as it relates to Wayne. Imagine if he does it in one less game or the same amount of games or one more game. Wayne could say, hey, well, he did it, but I did it in less games. So there you go. I mean, that's something always to look at. The playoffs are very intriguing. Only Vancouver and Calgary, it looks like, in the West, with Vancouver's drama. Another storyline to throw in there would be JT Miller. Like, what happens up till the March deadline? Oh, yeah. And in the East, you know, we got six teams that we really like, we think. I got to believe the Rangers make it, and the door is open, finally, for Ottawa. Will Boston fall out? Is it the year of the Blue Jackets? What about Montreal? So that would be intriguing. And wouldn't it be something if the Habs did get in and the Leafs played them in the first round, oof, this time with fans in the stands for the first time since 79? There's a lot of people that would like to see Toronto, Montreal for real in the playoffs one more time.
Yeah, things are percolating here. There could be some really, really good storylines that develop over the back half of the season, which will include a first international tournament in 12 years. So things are good in the hockey world as we speak. Last one, at least for me. What's the state of Saad for you, Cooley? Like, I don't know if Brandon Saad is a worthy investment for teams that have real ambition this year, but correct my form here. Like, can Saad bring something to a team after choosing to forego about $5 million and avoid the buses in the minor leagues?
He'll be in the NHL. I would take the minimum if I'm him and work on something for the summer and next year. From a Toronto perspective, if you have Pacioretty, I think that's duplication. And I think the Leafs are more interested in other options. I mean, let's be honest. When push comes to shove, Max Domi is probably going to be a winger in the playoffs anyway. And Pacioretty's a winger. And McMahon's a winger. And they probably need a third-line center. And one of their biggest issues in the playoffs in the entire Matthews administration is not scoring. They're having trouble scoring this year on purpose, bringing their goals against down at the expense of some offense. But I think they're going to try to add a third-line center more. And let's see what happens on the back end. You can never have too many people on the back end when you get to the playoff picture. So I would say Saad out for the Leafs, but in the NHL for sure on a playoff contender.
Yeah, good for him. It's nice to see someone bet on themselves. Hopefully he finds a place. I'm sure he will. I think he'll be through waivers in the next day or two. Coolius, we appreciate you jumping on. This was a blast. If we don't get to talk to you before the Four Nations face-off, enjoy it and best of luck. What we got here?
I got a prediction.
Yes.
A prediction. Okay, for the 2000 Hockey Dads, John Tavares, ooh, will score in his first game back. Okay. They've missed him. Okay. Leadership, face-off, and offense.
All
there
right.
You go.
Best. I am going to place a bet on that, Steve Coolius. Appreciate you coming on. All the best.
Thank you.
That's Steve Coolius of SiriusXM NHL. Four Nations play-by-play.
He gave you a prop while bringing in a prop.
I know, and we do our best bets next, so I should have just had that ready, like, I think there's rumor that John Tavares will be back in the lineup maybe Saturday, and mm-hmm, we'll have the game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, of course, on Sportsnet as well, Hockey Night Canada, Maple Leafs, and Edmonton Oilers. So I'm going to have to remember Coolius's thought, and I might put it in our bets. But you have some best bets for tonight. Let's do our best bets now, and then we can wrap up. We'll talk about the captaincies throughout the Four Nations face-off. We talked about it just briefly earlier on the show. Marc-Andre Fleury is going to play in his last game at the Bell Center unless the Wild and the Habs play in the Stanley Cup Final. That would be
or
long odds. Or if he gets traded, and that's not going to happen.
Probably not.
No. This is definitely his retirement tour. Like, he's not doing another one. This is it. So, Marc-Andre Fleury shutout at the Bell Center tonight. Wouldn't that be a really wonderful story? 17-1. He does have a pretty good record playing in Montreal. Obviously, he played for a couple different teams. When he comes back to Montreal, he's got a 12-6-3 record in 21 games in Montreal, a 267 goals against average, a 9-11 save percentage, and two shutouts. So it's doable. He can get another shutout tonight. And if you're feeling like that's a bit of a risk, which I do, under 3.5 goals tonight is a -150. But the problem is the Minnesota Wild just played last night on the back-to-back. They headed to Montreal. They're a bit tired, maybe from beating the Leafs. So we'll see. I'm hoping that he gets one last big send-off.
Listen, based on last night, the Wild can really park the bus.
They can clog it up.
Like, not that they were just, like, waiting on the Maple Leafs and making them just shoot into their shin pads, but they made that a pretty ugly game, and they made it so that the Maple Leafs didn't really have much to offer offensively. So I think there could be an encore in Montreal in favor of Marc-Andre Fleury tonight. I'm going to our main game on the network tonight, L.A. visiting Tampa Bay. I'm just taking the dog. L.A.'s got a little boost with Drew Doughty coming back. They should be feeling good about themselves to have their number one guy, and I don't know if there's any
back
real
for them, though.
Brant Clark drama, despite what our producer might say. So I'll take the Kings plus 135 in Tampa. I believe it's Rittich versus Vasilevsky, which is not a great goaltending matchup in favor of the Kings, but the Kings are a pesky team,
yeah,
and at least on par, I think, with the Lightning, all told.
Okay, we mentioned it. We got the Four Nations face-off captains, and we go through them with you. USA's Auston Matthews with Matthew Tkachuk and Charlie McAvoy as the assistants. I think the only thing that's interesting about that is he is the only one of the captains we'll go through that hasn't won.
Yes.
And or had much playoff success.
I say that's true. Who's Sweden's captain? I'm just
Sweden's
off the top of my head.
Victor Hedman. Never
heard. Victor Hedman. Oh, yeah. He's had a lot of success.
Yeah. Finland's is Barkov, Canada's Crosby. So Matthews is the one that's got to prove it, right? Like, he's the captain of the Maple Leafs, but he's only been the captain for this season. And there's a couple other captains on USA. I think the main surprise that I gathered from the internet was that Quinn Hughes didn't get an opportunity to be the captain. Quinn Hughes got enough to deal with right now. But that's also between USA and Canada. They only named two assistants, whereas the Finns and the Swedes have three assistants. So
yeah,
keeping their groups
I'm not
smaller.
Really sure why that is. Like, I immediately saw the Canadian contingent, like, oh, they're keeping an A for Drew Doughty. They're keeping an assistant captain for the guy who's not on the team
maybe
right now. But I don't know if that's the case, given that the USA only has three in, as part of their leadership team as well. I think it is notable. Like, I look at that USA roster, and there's immense amount of success, yeah, but there's not a lot of winning. You look at the Canadian team, McKinnon, McDavid's been on the run, Cale Makar, Sidney Crosby, of course, everything that he's brought, Petrangelo, not anymore, Theodore. Like, you go down the list, they're pretty accomplished group, even with Aiden Hill as their potential starting goaltender. And the same can be said about Victor Hedman, Sweden. Same can be said about Alexander Barkov and Finland. But it's just kind of where the United States is at. Like, they hope that Auston Matthews is ushering in a golden generation here with a lot of young guys who are going to play important roles for the next two, three, four Olympic games. Like, maybe that's a bit of a stretch, but this is the way the sport is going, with so many exciting Americans coming into the league. But there wasn't much of a back class to lean on, in the same way that Sidney Crosby obviously gives a great degree of pedigree to Canada. And the same goes for Hedman. The same goes for Alexander Barkov. It could be a lot different, though, 13 months from now, when you're looking at a USA team that maybe is looking to repeat as, I guess,
wins the World Juniors, world champions, keeps winning in some the World ways, Juniors, wins this
but
tournament.
But won the latest best on best, yep, and would be feeling really good about themselves.
Totally.
And maybe Leaf fans could benefit from Auston Matthews leading a team that has immense amount of success.
I think the United States had a big decision of who's going to be the face of USA hockey, because it could easily have been Quinn Hughes or Matthew Tkachuk or Brady Tkachuk or the other other captains in the league. Brady Tkachuk's the captain. Dylan Larkin's the captain. Quinn Hughes is the captain. They have a bunch of assistant captains. Matthew Tkachuk is like the face of his team as well. Jack Eichel, Adam Fox, they all wear letters. So to give that to Auston Matthews, you're right. That is like, okay, if we're going to win, you're our guy. Because there's so much marketing that's going to go into this. Hopefully it grows a lot more eyeballs on USA Hockey. And I don't know how many people think USA Hockey, Auston Matthews right away, right?
Yeah.
Because he plays in a Canadian market and hasn't won and hasn't played a lot of playoff games and hasn't had a lot of success. So, like, if you're an American that's not in Arizona or, like, over the border, are you thinking, like, the face of USA Hockey is Auston Matthews? It's curious to me, and we're going to find out.
And that's probably why he's the most important player in this entire tournament, because as much as it might be, like, created in a lab to satisfy Canadian hockey fans who want this, like, it is an important marketing tool.
It's a promotional event.
And Auston Matthews being the face of the United States, being one of the more popular athletes, if you could get there, and maybe there's more of a window than it seems with, like, you look at the NBA, all the superstars, not American right now. Like, there's a window for everyone to get behind potentially someone like Matthews. And when we get to the Olympic stage, surely they'll be looking for something. I think he's the right guy to build around.
Yes.
He is the most marketable. He is the guy that does the thing that's most marketable, which is scoring goals. I think he is of utmost importance to USA Hockey. And this is really just the beginning of that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how they roll all this out as we approach about 2 weeks out to the Four Nations face-off. All right, right on after us will be Blair and Barker. They're going to do a live hour here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, so tune in there. Blue Jays landed Max Scherzer a little earlier in the day, a one-year, $15.5 million contract, which is exciting. He's a force to be reckoned with, obviously older in his career, but looking forward to seeing what he's got left in that arm. Nonetheless, super big reason to go down to the ballpark.
I like, if I'm buying a ticket first week, it's the Scherzer start.
It's the Scherzer start. And it's a Scherzy.
And it's the Scherzy.
All right, that was the Fan Pregame brought to you by Botano. The game starts now. Have a great night. See you tomorrow.